Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
We're ready to go then.
Let's go.
Hey. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the That Time When podcast. It's been a while since I've said hello, everybody, like that. And joining me once again for another episode is Tommy and Dan. Hello, Tommy and Dan.
Hello.
Hello.
How are we both? Are we good?
Not too shabby.
Not too shabby. Dan?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm doing.
Ready to talk about Formula One once again. Right, today we're going to be talking about that time when Nelson Piquet crashed on purpose.
Dun, dun, dun.
Get out of my head.
Jinx.
Wow, okay. That was actually really weird. That wasn't even planned. Right, so we're going to talk about the very controversial incident that happened in the first ever Singapore Grand Prix, the first ever Formula One night race. And my goodness me, did we have some controversy.
It's quite a special one.
It was. And Nelson Piquet, obviously racing for Renault alongside Fernando Alonso.
Yeah. And not shy of controversy himself.
No. And those two racing together, Renault weren't too shabby back then, although they had quite average pace, but Alonso doing Alonso things.
Yeah, Alonso had just left McLaren the previous year after his kind of
debacle
spat with Hamilton. Those two didn't get on very well at all. And Alonso kind of jumped back to Renault after he'd won the title with them in 2006, went to McLaren, had the Hamilton thing, and ended up back with Renault. But back then in 2008, they weren't particularly strong like they were in 2006.
No, it seemed like once Alonso left the following year, the team just sort of dropped down to like best of the rest in the midfield sort of position.
Which is still, I guess, when you look at modern times right now, what they'd probably take, because they're not even best of the rest at the moment.
Yeah, they're taking obviously they're wearing Monza, but before this race, did Alonso score a podium before this race?
I don't think he had, no.
Piquet had, though, hadn't he? A very lucky safety car race in Hockenheim, but that was pretty much his only point scoring.
Interesting race. That was also a safety car that caused certain results. Interesting stuff. So Alonso had been rather impressive during practice, and then we moved to qualifying, where Alonso had been one of the favourites for pole, why was he the favourite for pole, considering it was an average car?
Because he was a beast at Singapore, as he proved in subsequent years, I would guess.
He was just a beast.
Yeah,
he was
Fernando Alonso.
He was fastest in practice 2 and 3, he went into qualifying, let's say, as a favourite, which was very surprising. The title that year was very much between Ferrari and McLaren. At that point, it was Hamilton versus Massa.
And then even if those weren't performing that well, it would be like you'd expect BMW Sauber to be up there, not Alonso in the Renault.
So this was 2008, just to clarify.
Just to clarify,
yes.
Yeah.
2008, so Renault, as we've mentioned, weren't up there winning races, but Alonso looking very good. But he had a car issue in qualifying.
In Q2, yeah.
What happened?
He had an engine leak, was it?
I think it was like a fuel pump leak. Yeah. Or like a really small, pitiful problem that cost him everything.
But yeah, he was doing well in Q1, looked set that it was going to be a really interesting shootout with him involved. But yeah, in Q2, he had a car failure quite early on in the session, I seem to remember, because he didn't set a time at all.
Yeah.
Which put him 15th on the grid.
Now we move to the race where, was it Massa on pole?
Yes.
Yeah.
In the Ferrari. So Massa led the race from Hamilton at the start, the two main title rivals.
Yep.
And then on lap 12, this is where the plan begins to unravel. I wonder how many people knew about this in Renault. We'll talk about that very shortly. But Alonso was the first car to pit. And was it quite a surprising thing to see him pit that early?
Lap 12. Suspiciously early, you might say.
Hmm.
A 61-lap race. It was a two-stop race. People were doing...
A
lot of cars were doing two stops. But it was maybe very early.
It's one of those things. It's like you could kind of... In a normal situation, you could see why they might do it to sort of undercut people and maybe gain some positions. But generally, if you're a fast car back then, starting at the back, you run heavy on fuel at the start.
And this is when we had refueling.
You'd move up the order when everyone pitted on more regular strategies, set a load of fast laps on light fuel, and then hope to move up the order, and then hope maybe a safety car would come out at the right time. But I guess that works when you stop early as well.
And that was, I guess, what you described there was the overcut in 2008 terms. It wasn't just the fact of going long on your tyres. It was also having much more fuel, so you would be even slower at the start of the race to then really pump in the lap times towards the end of the stint. So
This was the Bridgestone era as well, where it wasn't necessarily like the whole tyres were falling off a cliff after a few laps.
Basically, because you had to,
because you needed to.
Yeah.
It was more fuel determined when you were stopping, not tyres.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first, well, the main incident to happen was two laps after Fernando Alonso pits.
Yeah.
His teammate heavily crashes at turn 17, which is just before the bridge.
Where they go past the grandstand by the water and they cut under the grandstand.
Yes, yeah.
Final sector.
Where we've seen quite a few people crash, right, over there.
Not into the wall under the grandstand, but before that.
Yeah.
He lit up the rear tyres, spun round, smacked it into the wall in reverse, caused quite a lot of damage.
It's funny because on the warm-up lap, he had a spin as well.
Yeah, because I feel like that video only surfaced maybe a year later. Where a fan probably caught it and never thought anything of it. And then when this whole Crashgate scenario came out, someone uploaded it and everyone was like, oh, is this him practicing a spin, essentially? Mm.
And it probably was, wasn't it?
It could well have been, seeing how he did it.
Because, I guess he wanted to work out exactly how he crashes so that he doesn't hurt himself, but also crashes, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so
enough to cause a safety car, which did happen.
Yeah, so the safety car came out. There was it was a pretty huge collision, wasn't it, in the sense of there was quite a bit of debris everywhere. It was very much this is going to be a safety car. There was no hesitation, especially with the fact it's a street circuit, right?
Yeah.
And then the pit lane became quite the chaotic place to be. The Red Bulls and Barrichello pit just before the pit lane was closed. Because is that still a thing?
This was an era where they would close the pit lane when a safety car came out.
Yeah.
And you weren't allowed to enter the pit. It's something that IndyCar do.
I think they did it to stop drivers when there was a potential incident on track from driving back at full speed to get to the pit
to gain an advantage.
Which they don't do now because they've got the time dials they've got to stick to and everything.
They didn't have that at the time.
So they just closed the pits to stop anyone from
rushing back.
Yeah. So what happened in this incident was the Red Bulls and Barrichello managed to pit before the pit lane was closed. Obviously they saw the crash and could dive into the pits. Then they closed the pit lane, but in an era where refueling is still a thing,
sometimes
you did have a lot of incidents where people had to pit.
Yeah, yeah. If you're running out of fuel, you can't just not pit because the pits are closed. You've got to come in.
But then you'll take the penalty.
Which is odd because in IndyCar, like you say, they do the same thing. But I think if you've got to pit, you're allowed to take on like under a certain amount of fuel without penalty as long as you stop again when the pits are open again.
So there
are ways that they could have done it, but F1 just sort of said, no, we'll close the pits, and then didn't think about any of the other scenarios.
The fact that there is fuel that is needed for the cars to go
and
around.
And a car goes, well, I could take a penalty or I will retire from the race. I think I'll take a penalty. And obviously, Nico Rosberg did this and Kubica, and it worked out in his favour quite massively.
And when the pit lane opened, obviously everyone else came into the pits. Massa had quite the dramatic exit to the pits, didn't he?
Decided
to maybe wanted a bit more fuel and continued with the fuel hose still attached to his car, which was, I think, has been used quite a lot as a clip, hasn't it, for Formula One?
A pivotal moment in the title as well. It was very much a kind of back and forth battle between Massa and Hamilton, and Massa looked almost sure on to take a win there. Until this incident. I believe I'm right in saying that this was an era where they were just starting to develop a light system that replaced a lollipop man.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the exact ins and outs of it, but obviously Massa, I think, got a green light to go because someone presses.
I think it's one of the guys in the pit lane got a bit excited because obviously the pits was rammed, so obviously you want to get out ahead of everyone. Mm. And I think the guy that was controlling the lights just
saw a gap and was like, go.
Oh no, they've not finished the pit stop yet.
They've not finished the fuel, and it ripped the fuel hose completely off. And Massa drove down to the exit of the pit lane.
Didn't another team take it out, or was that another race?
I can't remember. I remember. I think there's a video where Ferrari are like running down the pits, and other teams are like applauding and laughing, kind of like a cool running style moment where they're running to like push him back and take the fuel out. But yeah, it was a very dramatic moment, which obviously Hamilton had a okay pit stop, but Massa very much, you know, he was on 10 points for a win back then. Good for his championship challenge, and ended up with nothing because of it, because it completely ruined his race.
Yeah, he probably got a penalty for an unsafe release as well, I think, didn't he? So yeah,
just completely dropped back out of contention,
and that cost him, didn't it? In the overall standings at the end. So coming back to the race now, after this pit lane chaos, we had Nico Rosberg leading from Trulli, Fisichella, Kubica, then Alonso, Webber, Coulthard, and then Hamilton. So Rosberg was leading, but he hadn't pitted. He had pitted
when the pits were closed.
Yeah, so he'd pitted when the pits were closed, and so everyone pretty much was on a two-stop. Rosberg had pitted, and he obviously took the penalty because he was running out of fuel.
Yeah,
but he was now net leader. But because
what was the penalty?
Drive through. Yeah.
Okay.
But the race actually panned out where Rosberg could lead away and build up such a lead that he would take his drive through and end up net second place behind Alonso. And that was all thanks to Jarno Trulli, who, if you don't know,
wasn't it Fisichella?
Jarno Trulli was on a one stop. I read that he was kind of blocked a lot of people, but Fisichella was,
because that was Force India's first year. And they were rubbish that year. So Fisichella up in third.
Was he on high fuel as well?
I think he was on a one stop, and I think he was primarily the one holding everyone up.
Hello. Oh. A bit of contention here.
I don't know. That's just from memory.
All right.
I trust Dan over anything that you've read. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I read that it was a classic Trulli train, which... Let me have a cheeky check.
Okay, whilst you check that, obviously you say that Rosberg led away, and then Rosberg came into the pits, and then Alonso led the race and won from there, and taking Renault's first win since 2006.
It was both of them. It was Trulli in a Toyota and Fisichella in a Force India, and they were both heavily fueled, which allowed Rosberg to pull a substantial lead.
So you're both right, but then it was Trulli at the front of it, so technically Tommy was right.
So we had a Trulli train with Fisichella involved. A Trulli Fisichella.
Maybe it was a Rosberg train, just with the front engine further away from the carriages.
Maybe. Either way, there was a train which was helped very much by Trulli and Fisichella. Trulli, obviously...
Italian train.
Yes, there you go. Trulli was always known for his qualifying performances, but then had absolutely no race pace. Is that right?
Yeah, hence the Trulli train.
Yes. So that's not where it ends, though. That's not the end of the story, is it? By any stretch of the imagination, the aftermath. So Nelson Piquet was dropped by Renault in August 2019, I was about to say. Wow.
Last month.
2009, and replaced by Mr. Grosjean.
Yeah, we should probably say that Nelson Piquet was pretty terrible. He had an awful year. Like we mentioned earlier, he had one lucky podium.
I think he was all right. At the second half of 2008, it seemed like he was getting it slightly together.
I think it was similar to the Alonso and Van Dorn situation, where it's like, can you really judge someone against Alonso?
But he
hadn't been all too
great. He was terrible in 2009, though.
But 2009, he had an absolutely woeful year, barely scored any points, and that was obviously, it got to the final straw where they said, we're going to have to drop this guy mid-season.
So a few days later, after being dropped... Brazil TV reported Piquet claimed he was told to crash on purpose to help Alonso win, and an FIA investigation was launched. Things obviously from there got very bitter between Renault team boss Flavio Briatore, who's not the most boring man to ever watch in the F1 paddock, was he? And Nelson Piquet, and then it went to court. at the World Motorsports Council meeting in September, so not too long. And
yeah, the dates actually happened quite quickly. So it was the 3rd of August when Nelson Piquet was dropped.
My sister's then, birthday.
There you go.
Happy birthday, Regina.
when that happened. The 30th of August was when the report started appearing on Brazilian news that Nelson Piquet had said that he'd had to do this. 4th of September, so not very long after, is when the FIA investigated it. And then that's when like the World Motorsport Council got involved, which happened on the 21st of September 2009 in Paris.
Quick. It's not like you just read any of that.
No. All off the top of my head, honestly.
The brain. And the result of all of this was that Renault was given a suspended ban for 2 years. So by suspended ban, basically means don't do it again. If you do it,
you're out.
You're out forever.
Yeah.
So basically a slap on the wrists, really, for Renault in a lot of ways. But
I think they've done a few suspended bans before. I think Michael Schumacher got one, didn't he?
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it sounds harsher than it is, because you read ban and go, oh, that's really bad, but they wouldn't.
It's a black and white flag from Monza.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. Boom. And then Flavio Briatore was banned indefinitely from any FIA-sanctioned event, while Pat Simmons received a 5-year ban. Now, that's pretty fair.
So, Pat Simmons, do you want to tell people who Pat Simmons is, just because he was quite a big player?
Yeah, he was basically... He was a really like well-known engineer, sort of like up there with like, not in terms of skill necessarily as Adrian Newey, but like that sort of big name. And he won championships with Schumacher and Benetton in the 90s and stuff. And it was basically, apparently it was him who...
ordered Nelson Piquet.
It came from him, apparently.
I read that Nelson Piquet said that Pat Simmons told him to do it. And Pat Simmons told everyone that Nelson Piquet had the idea, and obviously they couldn't prove either of it.
Why would Nelson Piquet? I don't
exactly. Why would he want to crash it?
Maybe in the hope of like, oh, can I have a drive for next year?
Yeah, because he hadn't been performing particularly amazing. Especially, you know, like we said earlier, years against Alonso. But there was talk of him being dropped. I remember at the time, and maybe it was a way to be like, look, I'm a team player. A very extreme
I guess team, if you look at it that way, it makes more sense that it maybe was Nelson Piquet, purely because if they knew they were going to drop Nelson anyway, why would Renault put themselves in that position where they're like, we're going to tell this driver that we're about to drop to crash into a wall? Whereas if it's Nelson saying, I could do this for you guys, could do you a solid, and then he got dropped anyway, I don't know.
It's difficult because it was always going to... They surely must have always known that if ever they fired Nelson Piquet, this would come out. Even if it was years later, maybe they thought, you know, he might release it in a book in like 10 years' time and not spill the beans so quickly. But it's worth mentioning that Nelson Piquet was given immunity from any sort of punishment because he'd come forward, like people do
in shows
where like crime dramas and stuff, where they help.
I'll tell you, but I need immunity.
Catch the bigger criminal get sent to prison.
We'll take down the whole of Renault.
exactly.
So yeah, he was given immunity, and Renault title sponsor ING pulled out immediately, which you can't blame them for.
Didn't this happen at Singapore, like ahead of the Singapore weekend the following year?
It did.
And then Alonso got a podium.
Alonso got a podium, and even funnier was in free practice in the very first session, Romain Grosjean spun off. In the same corner and went back into the wall, and it cut immediately to the Renault pit wall, and Bob Bell, who was the guy that replaced Briatore, I believe, cut to him, and he was sort of laughing about it, saying like,
"You either laugh or you cry at that point, don't you?"
Yeah, I guess it was his first. Was it his first race in charge?
I think it must have been because it was happening. Yeah,
and Renault had they arrived at the race with the ING. All their sponsorship removed, and it just said Renault on the side. But yeah, it was a big one to happen at that race.
A very big boy. Now, the question I'm going to pose to each of you, and I want a definitive answer from it. Did Fernando Alonso know?
No.
Tommy?
It's really difficult to know.
Okay, what do you think, Dan? Why do you say no?
Because at the time he won the race, there was a lot of speculation that... Alonso had like a clause in his contract that he could leave Renault if they didn't win a race. So Renault wanted him to win in order to keep him for another year, because there was talk at the time, because it was the whole, what's it called? The market crash.
The recession.
The recession. And all the manufacturers were pulling out, and Renault was reportedly one of them. But if they've got Alonso in their car, then obviously that's going to convince them to stay in the sport.
Yeah. I'm right in saying, ironically, Alonso won the very next race.
He won the next race completely fairly. Yeah. So it was like, if they really did fix it for Alonso to stay with the team,
they shot themselves in the foot
because they won the next race anyway. But yeah, I think, and that was before any of the whole suspicion about Crashgate came out. So I think that if that was the case, then it would make sense that Renault would, or that not necessarily Renault, but Briatore and Simmons could then go to the board and say, hey, look, we've got a race winning car and Fernando Alonso, you've got to stay in the sport.
So it was at this point the computer we recorded the podcast on ironically crashed. Thankfully, there was not much left of the discussion, and we'll be back next week for the Singapore Grand Prix review. See you next time.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.